Episode 35 of Speak Beastie for April 23rd, 2017.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Michael.
Mike.
What if
definitely
we all just...
Definitely not. Who's that?
Let's just shorten all of our names for this episode. Shan, Air, Liz, and Mike.
Air.
Air. I have no nickname. It can't be done.
L.
Air.
Say L.
L. But y'all get L. Your first half of the names. Why am I stuck with the last half of mine?
You can call me N.
No. Stupid.
N-L. Liz,
Shan
and Mike.
Is more like Shan. I don't know.
Yeah, my roommate calls me Shan, so.
No, there's
Speaking
nothing
of
wrong
Shannon
with it.
And Ariel, there. Look who's back together.
Yeah.
On this episode.
We finally got
the
it.
The dream
right.
team. Ooh. Shan, Mike, Liz, Air. Long ago, the four nations lived in harmony.
Oh my god.
I didn't laugh because I was just closing my eyes.
Oh, whatever.
When you're just like, oh my.
Okay, okay.
I love you.
That
I was like, I should throw a sophomore, but...
you did. But you made
you
that
know.
Joke.
I had to say the joke.
You know
Avatar,
Elena's going to put
the Last
that.
Airbender joke.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes, you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now, for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com, and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
And now for the Phoenix Register. So since we got such big news in the form of Dumbledore's casting... we're going to talk a little bit about the Irish Film and Television Academy Awards and save Jude Law for main discussion. But Sir Michael Gambon and Colin Farrell were set to attend the Irish Film and Television Academy Awards, where Sir Michael Gambon actually would be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award. Unfortunately, he was unable to attend due to illness. But... an update in the article on MuggleNet did say that, you know, they're going to let him have a ceremony at a different special event held later in the year. So, you know, they're not like, well, you're sick, so you missed out. Like, they're letting him have his moment, which is really good because I think that's got to be something really special for him. And... you know, it must have really been disappointing for him to have to miss that. But, yeah, Colin Farrell was actually nominated for his portrayal in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Unfortunately, he didn't win. But we here at Speak Beastie still recognize and appreciate his work in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and are very sad that he may not be in the future films. But who knows? We don't know. It could happen still. We don't know what really happened to Graves, the real Graves,
hope.
So. You hope? Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still
it sounded like
out
there was going to be more.
Double switch.
The Graves movie.
Where.
Oh, yeah.
He's
well, you know.
Actually, Colin.
Star Wars is doing all these, like, anthology films, so I don't see why the Wizarding World shouldn't start doing that and we end up with the Graves movie.
Mm.
You know. Just throwing that out there. What really happened?
I like that
I mean,
we're
that's
all
like a legitimate question.
Graves
like,
won.
Working our hardest to pretend that Rogue Grindelwald grapes. Would have as much mercy as, say, like, oh, I don't know, like Barty Crouch Jr. Be like, I just stuck him in a case. He's alive. No.
If it's Polyjuice Potion, he needs him alive.
But it wasn't Polyjuice Potion. Rowling confirmed that. It was I like
that you say it's merciful that he was stuck in a suitcase, like, the whole... You know? Hold up. We've never talked about this before. A suitcase that's so much larger on the inside and is containing the real Mad-Eye Moody and then Newt with his suitcase. I don't know. That's just a random... That has nothing to do with anything.
Newt but
I
is just... Barty Crouch.
No! It's confirmed.
So that's all the news.
Yeah, right? But, like I said, you know, the one news was so big that we had to save it for main discussion.
We had to put it. Yeah.
I think that's pretty fair. So that's it for this episode's Phoenix Register. If you want to check out more Fantastic Beasts news, be sure to check it out on MuggleNet.com. Lizzie, do you want to take it away with the Owlpost?
Yeah, sure do. So for this week's Owlpost, we asked you to send in all your questions, comments, and theories about Jude Law as Albus Dumbledore. So Ginny, a.k.a. Rose Murda, says...
Wait, Jude Law was cast as Albus Dumbledore?
I know!
We did not know this!
Ginny, a.k.a. Rose Murda, says, I'm okay with the casting of Jude Law as Albus. I can see that working. What will he sound like? The soft, gentle Richard Harris interpretation or the harsher Michael Gambon version? What'll he wear? Some iconic coats or robes? Is there anything in Harry Potter film canon that could dictate it? It's pre the final duel, so he'll have his own Ollivander wand. What about Fox? Does he have him yet? Or perhaps Newt gifts Albus an egg or baby phoenix?
Oh,
that's so cute.
That idea will come up when we talk about the Newt case. Excellent idea.
Ginny. Man, it's almost like we planned this episode or something.
Well, personally, I'm very excited about what Dumbledore is going to wear, what Jude Law's Dumbledore is going to wear.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think there's anything...
I'm excited about coat.
There's nothing in the books around this time period that that describes Dumbledore's clothing, but there is something farther at the end of the timeline in Half-Blood Prince, his description when he goes to the orphanage to get Riddle. I think the movie actually tried to stay somewhat close to that description. Like I think he's wearing a purple coat. It's just a little flashy.
Yes.
So this is Dumbledore and gosh, when did he go to pick up Riddle? Riddle was 11 at this point. This is in the 40s, right? Or the 30s?
Yeah.
So it's a little after when the movie's going to take place.
Read it and I'll check while you're reading it.
It says this younger Albus Dumbledore's long hair and beard were auburn. Having reached their side of the street, he strode off along the pavement, drawing many curious glances due to the flamboyantly cut suit of plum velvet that he was wearing. "Nice suit, sir," said Harry, before he could stop himself. But Dumbledore merely chuckled as they followed his younger self a short distance. So yeah, he's wearing a flamboyant plum velvet suit.
No.
Flamboyantly cut. Yes.
I can't wait to see what
that would have been in 1938. So actually,
so not too long after this movie's probably gonna take place.
Yeah, true.
But they didn't make Michael Gambon have auburn hair, did they?
Not in that version of the film. But I'm curious if they're even going to base if Jude Law's going to take anything from those performances because it's not meant to be necessarily related to movie canon.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I hope he doesn't, like, try to copy Richard Harris and Michael Gambon. Not that they weren't, like, great in their own right, but I want Jude Law. Full Jude Law.
Well, Emily also says, the most important question is, what will Dumbledore's facial hair situation look like? Full beard, 5 o'clock shadow, stylish goatee?
That's a really important question.
That is.
What does Jude Law with the beard look like? Has he ever really had a beard?
Well, because I know when he was... there was one role that I'm thinking of, and it's just completely... I can't... Oh, man, hold on, I'm just going to have to Google Jude Law beard.
Yeah, that's where I am.
Aw, he's so cute. I can't think of which movie it was. I am a... Please have a beard. Oh, there is even an article. Jude Law and Dumbledore... Is Dumbledore in Fantastic Beasts and JFC, imagine the beard. I am right there with you. That article.
Oh, man, yeah. He looks great with a beard.
I never thought I'd be like, young Dumbledore, hey. But here we are. Alas. Earwax, you know what I'm saying?
They knew what they were doing when they cast Jude Law, so.
Oh my god, yeah.
Shoo-wee.
Dear Lord.
Him with a beard kind of looks like... I don't know.
I think Dumbledore at least has a beard in, like, in his descriptions. Like, I don't remember exactly how he's described when Harry sees him in, like, Chamber of Secrets in the memory, but... Yeah, he's had a beard, I think, for a while.
I feel like they have to give him a beard, because that's so part of who he is.
He is working the shit out of this beard, let me tell you. Oh my gosh.
What if they gave Jude Law a really, really long beard?
Wouldn't that be hilarious? Beard him up. Stick a beard on that face. I don't care.
Well, shall we?
I just don't want him to have his Watson mustache. Sorry, yeah.
Shall we transition to the main discussion, which is about Jude Law? So, really, we just keep going.
Yeah.
Well, we might as well. These excellent Owl Posts submissions pretty much sent us right into it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you,
and Jenny.
Hey, Jude.
Oh, we're singing that.
Don't make it bad. Take a movie and make it better.
Make it better.
Remember to
let beards
onto your face and begin to make it better. I don't know.
Yeah.
And anytime you feel the pain.
Jude Law is sitting somewhere listening to this right now, being like, oh my god, I have to be on this.
If we got Jude Law.
Jude Law, Charlie Day.
I would end.
Can we not think about that? He's going to listen to this and be like, I'll be on, but not if that Ariel girl's on, because she's kind of creeping me out a little. Sorry.
So we have a little bit of Jude Law's like film history.
He has a great filmography. He's been in some excellent movies.
He really does.
I love him.
I've never actually seen The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, but I think it's so interesting that we have Johnny Depp, Colin Farrell, and Jude Law, who all played the same role.
I saw you put that in there, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. That's a weird movie.
I mean, I would only see it for Heath Ledger and Andrew Garfield. Well,
I know. I was going to say, because Ariel, I know you love Andrew Garfield. And my mom and I, that was like one of his earlier movies. Mm-hmm. He wasn't big yet. And my mom and I were just like, he's going to be like a thing soon. Yeah.
I keep meaning to watch it, but I'm never just like in the right mindset to. You know,
it's hard to like the ending kind of falls apart pretty catastrophically for me, but especially in relation to their character, that's what kind of makes it a little challenging for me. But it's very because wasn't it? It was Terry Gilliam who directed it, I think.
I don't know, actually.
One of the Monty Python guys. So he's known for some pretty weird stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is funny that they were all, they all played the same character.
Like, those were the three actors who stepped forward after Heath Ledger passed away mm-hmm. and were like, you know, how can we help? And I think, Johnny Depp's not British, but I know, like, we all joke how, you know, the same five people are in every British movie, but, like,
yeah,
it's happening. Like, they're, not only did they play the same character, like, they're in the same film series, like, in a very... Johnny Depp and Colin Farrell kind of played the same character. And now Jude Law's playing the best friend of that character. And, you know, he loved him. I don't know how to phrase that any other way, but I just thought, like, I'm like, what? Anyway, apparently they mentioned it in the Pottermore article. And I said something about it in the group. I didn't even read the article. And I was like, oh, wait. Okay, never mind. I'm not that clever. But the fact that I had not seen the movie and knew that, I was like, what? You
know, it's impressive, Ariel.
That's something. Yeah, thank you. I tried.
What else is he about?
I did also. Yeah, I made the joke. Mm-hmm. He's going from Alfie to Albie. I actually watched Alfie not knowing anything about it.
I don't know anything about it.
And I was like, oh, just, you know, a cute little rom-com. Don't go in with those expectations. That's all I gotta say about that. But he was good in that. He played the attractive man very well.
Well, yeah. That's who he is.
Yeah, yes. Actually, Jude Law's kind of a lady killer in, like, real life. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it nope, I'm not going to go there because I feel like I'm not, you know. Michael seems to know where my mind is heading, but that's all that matters.
She'll leave it be. She'll leave it be.
Yeah. So, he also played Lemony Snicket in the movie adaptation of A Series of Unfortunate Events, mm-hmm. Which, a children's book adaptation.
He wasn't in it enough.
No.
No. But I remember hearing his voice in the, as he pronounced it, advertisements, and I was, because I was so, how old was I when that movie came out? I was like 12 or 13. And I loved that book series and I was obsessed. And I remember you could get like CDs and some cereal boxes and it would show you like special scenes from the movie or whatever. And I watched the shit out of those. I put them in my computer and he was like, following theatrical advertisement, and I just like that every time he would say that before each CD, and I was just like, I loved him as Lemony Snicket. I remember watching or hearing about the casting for the Netflix series, mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this, but Patrick Warburton actually did a really good job. He did a totally different take on it, which I really loved. I think they both did. For, like, the necessary adaptations they did. Adaptations they did the necessary...
ever since the movie part. Or the TV show came out, people have really been knocking the movie. But the movie was not a bad movie.
No.
Like, it was a very well-done movie.
It was. I loved it. Yeah. It was just... changed a lot. And yeah, I think he did a really good job. And, of course, his most important role... Mr. Napkinhead. The Holiday.
I figured out last night I've seen 10 of Jude Law's films and The Holiday is not one of them.
I haven't seen The Holiday either.
I love that film.
It's so good.
Existence.
Oh yeah.
Which it's a weird movie.
That's supposed to be a weird one.
Yeah, I watched it for a class, and it was very weird.
Oh, cool.
But Jude Law was in it, so it was fine.
He was also in Repo Man, I think the non-musical version. That's all I know about that.
I've The earliest film that he was in that I've seen is, which is one of my favorite films, is Gattaca. He's excellent in that movie. This is a little baby. It's a little baby Jude Law. Like, he's all fresh faced and like new to the world of acting.
I'm so glad that I guess we've been given the opportunity to just talk about Jude Law.
Jude Law and his film career.
Who would have thought that this would have happened?
Right.
And he's also in another great sci-fi movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence, mm-hmm. where he plays a gigolo robot. And it's great.
Ooh. I may have to watch this.
It's amazing. And one of those like films that actually was a major watershed film, but it just kind of got lost in the shuffle, sadly. He plays the titular Sky Captain of Sky Captain mm-hmm. of the World of
I
Tomorrow.
I gasped movie. So hard my chest hurt. Oh.
So happy. Ooh. She just hurt herself.
I
remember seeing that movie. Oh, I'm sorry. Ooh.
I really like him as Watson in the Sherlock Holmes movies. He's my favorite Watson, I think.
As do I.
And I really like Sherlock Holmes. So when I say Jude Law's my favorite Watson, like,
oh, I know.
That means a lot.
Oh god, him and Robert Downey Jr. have some like amazing chemistry.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're really good in those roles. Yeah. I know everybody like forgot that version after like Benedict Martin Sherlock came out, mm-hmm. but the Guy Ritchie Sherlocks are really fun.
Yeah.
They're pretty great movies.
And they're completely different Sherlock Holmes in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've cosplayed Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock because
I can't say that he's ridiculous. Like my favorite Sherlock because he's not, but like. Him and no one else could have been Sherlock with Jude Law's Watson. Jude Law's Watson is perfect. And him,
I think he gets Watson in the same way that Martin Freeman gets Watson.
Yeah,
like they both definitely play Watson in similar ways.
Wasn't Jared Harris in Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, he's Moriarty.
He was in the second one. Yeah,
yeah. I wonder if he's mad.
You know, and Jude Law was in the 1980s Sherlock Holmes series as like a one-off role.
Yeah.
Huh.
I saw that on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
That is funny though, because I've heard people were actually kind of surprised that Jared Harris wasn't cast. Because obvi.
I was not that surprised, but
I thought it would have been cool, but I know.
Yeah.
I know they're doing a different thing with the set of movies. So I, you know, just like when we wanted Richard Ayoade as Newt Scamander, like, it wasn't going to happen, but it would have been great. It's just...
There's still time.
He could still show
we'll
up.
We'll remake the movies with Richard Ayoade and Jared Harris.
Okay, cool.
And Colin Farrell.
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes.
And we'll find a place for Jude Law to still be there, frankly.
Oh, yeah. He'll just show up.
I like that this episode is basically like, if you haven't, go watch all of these Jude Law movies
now. Yeah.
Because they're good.
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of Holmes and Watson, how gay will it be? That was it. Yeah. I just had to make that joke, really. But Elena wrote a wonderful article on MuggleNet that actually got quoted by the BBC.
Yeah, that was a really good article.
Yeah.
It's because it was a really good article, so Elena.
That's amazing.
About why it's important that, like, we show that Dumbledore's gay.
Yeah. And I was reading some comments that were getting me pretty riled up. Pretty miffed, yeah. I was like...
She's got her fisticuffs out.
You know me.
Screw wands. Time for fisticuffs.
Yeah, basically. But...
No, yeah.
I do agree with almost all of the points that Elena was making. Like, they have a real opportunity here that they missed in the original series. And I know, to a certain degree, that we were seeing a different Dumbledore then.
Mm-hmm.
And... But you know, now we're seeing him very much in that time period, like in that time of his life where he's still kind of probably in love with Grindelwald and battling with those feelings and, you know, the fact that Grindelwald is hideously ugly and a horrible person.
Okay.
Well, that's like, it's... I'm like, I know that it's gonna be difficult because, like, you don't just want... It's not, like, great queer representation to just have Dumbledore pining after this really horrible person for all the movies.
I think Elena's article kind of defined really well, like, what a good way to do it would be.
Yeah.
It's not to have him just being obsessed and pining over Grindelwald, but it's also not to just not have it at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's like the first time that J.K. Rowling told someone Dumbledore was gay was when they were going to write just a line into the movies where he mentions like a past girlfriend. And it's like, you can do that and just say boyfriend.
Yeah.
But I could have. Yeah, but he didn't date at all, really, did...
No, probably not. No.
Yeah.
So the idea is that after everything with Grindelwald, he basically became asexual and celibate. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't really... As Rowling put it, he kind of turned his attention to books, because he was hurt so badly. Which is very, very sad, and really not a... Yeah. Not a... it's an unfortunate trope as well, that she did that. And as Elena pointed out, which I think is excellent and something that I've discussed a lot on Alohomora and that people tend to forget, is that especially because, well, I want to say we've come so far, but things have kind of regressed a little bit in that respect. But that said, 2007, it's hard for people to remember, was a different time. As Elena pointed out in her article, there was only one state in the U.S. that allowed gay marriage at the time.
Yeah.
The climate was different. And Rowling, I think, was playing her cards very well the way that she did it.
Yeah, frankly, if you reread Deathly Hallows now being like, Dumbledore's gay, like, it's not that subtle.
Mm-hmm.
When
you
read about all the Grindelwald stuff.
Yeah, it makes the story actually, people are still debating it to this day how they feel about it. Personally, I feel like it makes Dumbledore's character arc really rich and interesting. It adds a really great layer to it. And yeah, I totally feel like it could be, you know, to bring up the thing that I was trying to bring up last week that I shouldn't have because we're not a Disney podcast, but kudos to Beauty and the Beast because Beauty and the Beast did it right.
Yeah.
With LeFou, because I know, like, everybody was losing their mind. They're like, oh my god, LeFou's gonna be gay. First of all, if you've never, you should really watch all your Disney films again, because they're all gay.
Yeah.
Also, like, oh my gosh, so much gay coding in Disney movies. That said, they decided to be more direct with it, and it was great, because LeFou is just a character, and his homosexuality is not the complete defining thing about his character.
He actually has a
really great character arc in the movie.
A lot of people I know like didn't like it, like a lot of gay people, but I think it was the way that, like, Disney can't just suddenly be like, and now your favorite Disney princess is gay. Like, that would be too much of an uproar. Like, I would love that, but that would be too much. And so it was like, okay, look, this minor character is gay, and you know, we're just gonna do it like it's a normal thing.
And it's a character that kind of... like, you know, you watch the original cartoon and it makes sense. It's not anything...
Yeah, and it's just... It's opening the door for more queer characters in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, again, the way that they treated LeFou is that they kind of revised his character a little bit.
So that
it worked. And it does. Like, I mean, yes, totally. LeFou definitely has shades of that in the original. Like, why is this guy following Gaston so much? Yeah. But yeah, no, it worked really well because they they treated LeFou's character with a lot of respect. And Josh Gad was an excellent pick for that role, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's what also helped. And in theory, Jude Law is an excellent pick for Dumbledore and could definitely do something like that as well. Play it in a way that he's just a person.
Yeah, that's not a stereotype. Just no. Just a person.
It's not that hard to do. So, it's implied, it's never stated, but it's implied in the books that Dumbledore's feelings for Grindelwald are part of the reason why he couldn't bring himself to face him.
Yeah.
Until he did. So that could be really interesting. Yeah.
If you don't acknowledge it at all or try to make it like super subtle so no one will notice, like it's just not going to work because it's a big part of the story.
And I think it's such a vast difference between being betrayed by a friend and being betrayed by someone you have that love for. Like, those genuinely, like, romantic feelings for. And, like, I know, like, if I ran into a person who I used to be friends with who screwed me over, I'd, like, want to punch them. Like, I'd face them head on. I'd be like, you suck. But if it was, like, an ex-boyfriend who, like, really, really, like, just tore me apart, I wouldn't be able to. I'm like, I will avoid you at all costs. Like, it's so different. And I think that does show how deeply hurt Dumbledore was. And I hope we see just how well-rounded he is as a character, and we get more into that whole situation and that part of who he is, because, you know, they no longer really have the excuse of hiding behind, well, it's children's stories, you know, like, it's PG-13, like, you're catering to the adult audiences that grew up with the Harry Potter books and films. Like, we're grown up now. Like, don't mess around and say, like, oh, we don't want to finish. No, shut up. Just do it. Just, like, do the thing. Show us Dumbledore.
I'm just very interested in, like, what the timeline is going to look like for Dumbledore's story. Because 1927-ish France, Ariana Dumbledore is already dead. We're past that point. So their relationship is already over. You know, they've already fought. Like, that entire part of the relationship has passed. So I'm very interested to see, like, if we get flashback sequences, how far back they'll go. Like, how much they're going to give us in that sense. Because then, depending on how far back, we can really get a good sense of what their relationship looked like. You know, because we...
Well, that's, like, we don't know yet how much of, like, the second movie he's going to be in.
He just shows up at the end.
Yeah, he's going to be, like, Mark Hamill in The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens.
The whole movie, we're just like, where is he? Where is he? And then he turns around at the last minute, and you're like, there he is.
Newt's holding out
a wand.
Phoenix egg. Oh, that too.
Newt's got the Elder Wand somehow.
Yeah, he's holding it out. Oh my god.
And Dumbledore takes off the hood of his robes. And they stare at each other.
And again, a bearded face.
He's missing a hand for some reason.
I'm just hoping that we get
And cue fade up. There it is. We figured it out. All of this discussion is for naught because he's not even going to say anything.
Well, I just hope the rest of the films we get enough of the conversation to know, like, how the relationship formed and what exactly it really looked like, and we don't just get the bitter end of it, like you pretty much led to my sister's end. I hate you. I loved you once. Now I don't. Prepare to die, kind of thing.
Well, the thing that Dumbledore, I think, says too in Deathly Hallows, I want to say, is that he does explain that part of the reason too that he didn't want to confront Grindelwald is he was worried that Grindelwald would be able to confirm for him who killed Ariana.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with a lot of things. Like, it not only comes with that personal guilt, but it also does come with how he feels about Grindelwald.
Yeah.
So, depending on who did it.
It's a lot of emotions.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things you could explore, potentially explore there. And it's the other thing to wonder is the film, or these, you know, next four films, are they going to make the proper room for that? Like, whose story is this going to be? Because we just wrote a great Dumbledore movie, but this is Newt's movie.
Like, now that we have him, I want them to do the right thing with it. I don't want to waste this opportunity. Yeah. And I hope that they don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Newt did say in the new edition of Fantastic Beasts that Dumbledore was more than a teacher. So, how's that going to turn out? Like, what was so special about their relationship?
What makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you?
That's the question.
That is the question. That's the true core question of this entire series.
Because he's Newt and he's adorable and sweet and everybody should love him.
Yeah.
And everybody loves him.
Everybody loves like Newt. Oh. That always makes me so sad when he says that. I'm like, oh, just, I get
See, you, Newt, but... maybe that's it. Maybe Newt, because clearly Newt doesn't think that people like him and he wants to be liked. Maybe Dumbledore was the only person who actually liked him. It would certainly seem so. Like, just from the get-go. Dumbledore likes the social misfits. Outcasts and misfits. Yeah, he loves.
He's like the island of misfit toys. He's the king of the island of misfit toys.
On the island of Dumbledore.
That's the island he's on at the end of the movie when Newt comes by.
That little polka dotted elephant comes walking up. That's like my sister's favorite character. That's why this is the only one I really know. There's like a doll that's.
A sack full of toys makes a sack full of joys. 4 millions of girls and 4 million.
Well, we have some other points.
Yes.
Yes.
Stop singing Christmas songs in spring.
Christmas Day is here. Oh, gosh. Okay. But we were talking a bit about Beauty and the Beast, and Jude Law is actually friends with a person that was in Beauty and the Beast. Ewan McGregor. And I'm thinking he should be like, hey, buddy, come join me in these films.
Proposal.
These movies are so fun. Come join
Ewan McGregor as Aberforth.
Let's make it happen right now.
Okay. That's it. Yes. We just cast the role. That's it. No more.
I want it.
No more can be done. They must listen to us now.
Because they look like brothers.
Ewan was my pick for Albus, so
He was for a lot of people.
Well, because he's been highly desired for the Harry Potter canon for a while.
Oh yeah,
like people he was the one people were talking about first for Lupin, and he would have been great. David Thewlis was fantastic, but Ewan would have been great, and Ewan would have been closer to the correct age, I believe. But they weren't casting with the correct ages in mind.
Yeah.
We gotta snap up Ewan McGregor soon,
please.
Because before they get him into something in Star Wars, because then he'll be busy.
Yeah. At this point, they're just like, put him in any role, like anything to get him in these movies.
Please.
Did you see him on Graham Norton when he was talking about, like, the one line he recorded for Star Wars? It was pretty funny, because he was like, blended me with Alec Guinness, and they took him saying the line "afraid," and they just found the "ray." That was pretty great, though.
Oh my god,
Ray! These are your first steps, or something.
Yep.
come be in Harry Potter, Ewan McGregor, please.
I'm just thinking about Star Wars now, so I was like, I gotta.
No,
I know, I was too. I was thinking about the new trailer.
The Star Wars Celebration is happening right now, like 20 minutes away from me.
Go right now, leave.
It's stop really recording. Expensive. What?
Harrison Ford is here.
Oh my god. You could run into him. But seriously, Ewan McGregor, you've done Star Wars, you've done Disney. Come play in the Harry Potter world.
Finish.
Please.
Complete the trifecta.
Yes, complete the Holy Trinity.
Rule the world.
The Holy Fandom Trinity.
Yeah. There's no more Lord of the Rings to be had, so.
No. Sorry, you missed those.
Yeah. But another thing I noted is that there's quite a big age gap between Johnny Depp and Jude Law. For them to be playing relatively the same age. Johnny Depp is 53 and Jude Law's 44. Which I didn't realize Jude Law was 44. I sometimes forget that I myself in 25 and like I thought he was like 30. I don't know. He looks really
he's
good
aged,
for his age.
He's aged very well.
Yeah. very well. But let's not get started on Jude Law's attractiveness again. It's just
it's too late. It's too late. My God, look at him. Just go, listeners. Go, just go look at him.
But look up Jude Law beard. That's what you need to look up. That's,
enjoy. Have fun.
That's the good stuff
right there.
Well, it's
interesting. Depending on, because we don't know when exactly the next movie is going to take place. Just somewhere before 1945, basically. Because he could. Like, Jude Law might be actually younger than Dumbledore is supposed to be.
Really? But I thought you said that he was... Wait, so how was... He was...
Dumbledore
was
38?
Oh, he's like... What you're saying is he would physically be younger than Dumbledore. Okay, sorry. Continue. I got confused. I thought you were saying, like, he would be playing Dumbledore younger than 44, but you're saying he'd be playing older than
Dumbledore 44. Was born in 1881, so in the first Fantastic Beasts movie, he would have been 45.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think by the time filming starts, like, you know, it'll be a few years off. Like, it won't be so, like...
Yeah, it's not like,
this guy's 60?
He's like a baby and Dumbledore's old, but just like that it's interesting that there's... Yeah.
There's also... The whole wizarding aging thing where, you know, Dumbledore was like over 100 during Harry's time. And he looked, you know.
Well, and Eddie Redmayne is like way older than Newt's supposed to be. Not way older, but like.
I thought he was just like a few years older.
I think he's like 5 years older. Maybe more.
That, like the way they're doing with the timeline, I think.
But
he'll catch up.
Yeah,
some of the members of the quartet are a little older than they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's fine.
How old's Colin Farrell? I'm sure I've talked about this before.
Colin Farrell is ageless and
because I cannot stop talking about Colin Farrell if I tried.
Could we ever?
He's 40.
I mean, it's only 40?
Yeah.
Wow. Yum.
Oh, gosh. I hated that a lot.
So would Colin Farrell. He'd be like, no thanks.
Okay, Jude Law doesn't want me on the show. Colin Farrell doesn't want you on the show. If we ever have the opportunity.
I can be on with anybody.
My final point, really, is... A disappointment in the fact that we're not
big
getting a Colin Farrell Jude Law duel.
A disappoint? Your final point is a disappointment?
Yeah. it's a disappoint. But as I was typing this, I was like, but wait, what if Graves is alive and he's got like a super huge grudge and he's so mad and like Colin Farrell and Jude Law team up to take down Johnny Depp?
Oh my god.
That would be great.
My body would not be able to handle
and
it.
And also Eddie Redmayne's there too.
Yes. Oh my.
We have completely transformed these movies. Are there beasts in these movies anymore?
Yes.
Jude
Maybe.
Law's a beast. With a beard, he's a beast.
Oh my god. Well, we haven't really just like
Dan Stevens.
We haven't just given our definitive opinions of like, what do we think of Jude Law as Dumbledore?
But like, we've inferred what we feel about
it. Yeah, I just thought
it.
I'd like honestly, I'd
horrible
like, lay
casting.
It out there.
We hate it. What were they thinking?
I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
I came when it off happened, break at work, and I just had a text from my sister that just said Jude Law. No other context.
Jude Law.
And I was like, what? And then I looked at other messages, and I figured it out. But and then I was excited.
See, when I saw it, because, you know, everyone at MuggleNet was going banana sandwich, but
banana sandwich. I just, yum.
I'm hungry, okay?
Lizzie, how do you feel about Jude Law?
I'm excited. I haven't.
I feel like we really know Michael and Ariel's opinions, so.
Sorry.
I haven't seen as many Jude Law films as I should, as I look through like his filmography, so I'll have to fix that. But from the films that I've seen and just like in general, I'm really looking forward to it because he was someone that none of us predicted at all. And now I'm like, wow, I don't know how we never thought of that one.
Yeah.
But I'm like pleasantly surprised. Like, I'm happy about it. I actually freaked out at work. Like, we have one office and it's like 15 people and I saw it and I like stood up and I was like, and I was like freaking out. And I'm the only person in this office who probably gives any kind of care for Potter. And I was just, like, standing up and fanning myself. And I was like, Jude Law is going to be Dumbledore. And everyone was like, yeah, tell us how you really feel about it. And I was like, I'm going to sit down now. I'm really sorry. That was, like, a lot. I can't. And then I just sat down and, like, was scrolling through articles for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah. I remember seeing it and, like, my first reaction was, wait, really? But then I was like, huh, yeah. But I guess part of it, maybe we didn't really think of Jude Law because he is relatively young looking. Like, not the youngest, obviously. But, you know, when you think young Dumbledore, we went to, like, Jared Harris and people that are very distinct looking. And, well, not that Jude Law isn't distinct, but, you know, he was the son of Richard Harris, and he played, like, you know.
Well, it doesn't help, too, that the Half-Blood Prince movie, they just used Michael Gambon for young Dumbledore. So it's like we don't really have much of a...
Yeah.
I think even Harry even says in Half-Blood Prince, I think, that he can't even
old.
Picture... Yeah, he was always old. Like, he can't picture Dumbledore as young.
Yeah.
So it's a hard thing to see.
Yeah, that's why, like, our thoughts even went to people that were probably older, or even just people were just like, this would be cool.
I was worried about a famous actor. I mean, I knew it was going to be a famous actor because by the time you cast Johnny Depp, you can't just have an unknown Dumbledore. But then it was Jude Law, and I was like, it's okay.
I saw
the news right after I came out of a movie, and my roommate, Jara, when I told her, she's like Shannon. She has very deadpan reactions to things. And she was just like, oh, is that supposed to distract me from stupid Johnny Depp?
Well, yeah.
I even said that or something along those lines to someone. I was like, I feel like they're really trying to make up for Johnny Depp here. I was like, it's not going to happen. But I was like, you know, it's Jude Law.
For these couple weeks, I can be like, Jude Law.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll still be excited about Jude Law, but...
Yeah. And it gives me a lot of satisfaction to know that he'll eventually defeat Johnny Depp's ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun thing, listeners, if you don't know enough about Jude Law, go look up the clip of him on Sesame Street.
The
thing about the word.
How did I know you were going there?
He says the word cling. And he says it just like cling.
Oh, man.
It's all about cling.
We hadn't brought that up yet, and, like, I was thinking about it, and then you started talking, and I was like, I feel like he's going to take it to Sesame Street, and you did.
Good people go to Sesame Street, man. Like, it's just fact. Has Johnny Depp ever been on Sesame Street? No.
No. They don't want him on Sesame Street.
Don't tell him how to get to Sesame Street.
Nobody. Nobody give him those directions.
Shall we move on to the time turner?
Yes.
It's hard, but yes, we should.
It is hard to stop talking about Jude Law. So for the time turner this week, I thought I'd talk about more gay stuff. My roommate was like, you should talk about gay stuff, basically. And so that's what I ended up doing. It was really hard to find, like, good stuff. It was really hard to find, like, good stuff from the 30s. I was trying to find, like, a good, solid, like, person or event or something. I was looking at the 30s because I figure, like, we're going to be getting into the 30s. And but it was hard to find stuff in the 20s, too. Especially, like, for England, I don't know. There were no gays in England for some reason. but they were really in France, so according to Wikipedia, Paris was a queer center, queer capital, as Wikipedia said. One Wikipedia, you know, I mean, I don't get all my information from Wikipedia, but that's where I start. But one line on Wikipedia, I basically summarized it as, like, they basically said Paris wasn't, like, the gayest city in the world, but it was, like, the most flamboyant gay city.
Oh.
So.
Way.
And then, like, the Nazis.
Baguette.
Because Berlin was pretty gay, but then the Nazis, you know, happened.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but then, like, while the Nazis were cracking down on Berlin, that gave Paris an opportunity to just be even more gay for a little while, because then the Nazis kept ruining everything.
More on that. If you haven't ever seen Cabaret, listeners, watch Cabaret. That pretty much explains that.
Yeah. I figured I couldn't talk about the gays in Paris without mentioning Oscar Wilde, who was really queer. And he spent his last few years in Paris, but he died in 1900, so unfortunately we're not going to, like, meet Oscar Wilde, though that would have been amazing.
Oh, man.
Oscar Wilde and Dumbledore would definitely get along.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, they would have made such a great pair. Oh, yeah. I'm sad for Dumbledore now. That was, like, a perfect pairing.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Dumbledore missed out on his true soulmate.
Yeah.
gay clubs were really big during the Jazz Age in the 1920s. And I kind of went on a tangent because I was looking at... There was one called Clair de Lune, which I thought was a great name. But then there was one called Le Monocle. and I just kind of got distracted by this because it's amazing. And it was a club just for lesbians. And they dressed up... Well, not all of them, but a lot of them dressed up in men's clothes and they wore monocles. That was, like, the signal that you were a lesbian.
That's amazing.
And, like, so there was this club called Le Monocle, and it was owned by this woman named Lulu. And, yeah, it's just all these, like, dapper women. There's, like, if you search it, you can find pictures of all of these women.
Looking at the article right now, yeah.
And then, unfortunately, you know, the Nazis showed up and they got shut down. But you can, as of, when was this article? It was last year. So as of last year, like, the front of the club is still there and it's shaped like a monocle. But it's not open anymore. They reopened after World War II somewhere else. But, yeah, the original facade is still there.
Oh, man, they got to reopen it there.
I know.
That's amazing.
And I was writing out this whole time turner, and I was like, Elena's going to really wish she was on this episode. So Elena would have loved all this. But then As I wrote in the doc, I got distracted. And Dumbledore probably wouldn't have gone to Le Monocle because it was for lesbians. But I think he would have had a good time in Paris. I think he would have fit in and he would have liked it. That was my very like messy gay time journey for this week.
I like that. I feel like Dumbledore could have a time in Paris.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dumbledore's gay in Paris.
That's the other thing that we don't know much about, because Rowling keeps saying this when she's confronted with this question. She's said it multiple times where people are like, how do wizards feel about gay people? And she's always like, they don't care. And so it's like...
Yeah. She's very blasé about anyone who's... I don't know, like, she did the same with illness, where she just kind of brushed it off. Oh, they've cured all of them. I'm like, you, okay, cool.
Well, and
we'll just ignore that as well. Like,
she went into slightly more detail about that on Pottermore.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, there's definitely some nuances that aren't covered in that piece.
Yeah, like,
and the same thing here, where she's just like, they're more hung up on like blood status and like background, and
yeah, like they have their own little like things. They don't, it's like they don't pay attention to like the Muggle things, like race and religion and
which is funny because it's, like it, I think it's weird. That's especially weird with the UK kind of wizarding community, because they're very based in medieval beliefs and medieval wizardry, and that wouldn't have gone down well from that culture. So it's kind of funny that they just didn't pick that up. It's nice to think that there's that very open-minded freedom in the wizarding world, but at the same time, since we never see it, how prominent is it really, I guess?
Yeah, it's just kind of glossed over, and
yeah,
I feel like, you know, like, yeah, of course they're gonna have different issues, and they're gonna be like, oh, well, Muggleborns, and you know, like, I don't know, that's totally a topic for another day, but I feel like there still would be some people who would have those issues. There has to be, like, they're still human. And they're still, like, you can still be a shitty human and a shitty wizard. Like, it's, you don't have to separate the two. Like, well, he's a bad wizard because he thinks, you know, oh, there's my alarm for my medicine. Oh, I'm sorry. But, like, you know, they gloss over it. And I don't know. She makes them far more progressive than I think they actually would be, because all of these things are allegories or metaphors for actual real life things, like with Lupin and like with Hermione being a Muggleborn, and just, you know, all of these things. It's like, you know, just be outright with it. If you're gonna, like, don't tiptoe around it. Just. Like, maybe there were actually problems.
That's it for Time Turn. Take it away, Michael.
Ooh, that was like your sexy podcast voice, Shannon.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you didn't even know you had it, but you do.
Take it away, Michael.
Oh, well, let's stop go into it. The Nude Cage, shall we? Yes, we shall. All right. Well, we have a very sexy animal to talk about in the Nude Cage. So I figured it was fitting, talking about Dumbledore, kind of the main point of this whole episode. So why not talk about the animal that is essentially an extension of Dumbledore, the phoenix. So a little information about the phoenix from Newt. The Ministry of Magic classification is quadruple X, but that is not for aggression. Because the phoenix is known to be a very peaceful, docile creature. It is rather for its near impossibility to be domesticated. There are actually only two known domesticated phoenixes in Harry Potter canon. Fox is one of them, obviously. The other, the other one is Sparky, who is the mascot for the New Zealand Quidditch team, the Motuhara Macaws.
How you gonna name a Phoenix Sparky like that? Come on, rude.
Phoenixes are actually native to Egypt, India, and China. No mention anywhere of them being in Europe, really. They prefer mountain peaks. And actually, in my research, I found that Rowling was probably pulling from, respectively, with Egypt, India, and China, she was referring to the Bennu, the Garuda, and the Fenghuang. That is all of the respective names for a phoenix in those countries. And the Bennu is actually from ancient Egypt. The Garuda is more of a, from India, is kind of more of a humanoid phoenix. And there's a whole long story that goes along with the Garuda. And the Fenghuang, I'll get to a little later because Rowling's actually referred to that in her canon. But phoenixes are gentle and herbivorous. They have never been known to kill anything. They have a lot of abilities, some more convenient for plot devices than others. The classic ability that Rowling did take from mythology is that they do regenerate, and according to Newt, they live to, quote, an immense age. So, potentially they do die at some point, but not for a while.
They could be killed.
They could be killed. But I assumed like an immense age implies that they do die of natural causes at some point. Which came first, the phoenix or the flame? They can disappear and reappear at will. Slightly one of their more convenient abilities that Rowling kind of drummed up. They have healing tears. Yet another convenient ability. Probably, though, their most convenient ability, they can carry heavy loads, which there are stories of that does kind of tie in with the Legend of the Firebird, but we'll get into that a little bit farther down. They increase the courage of the, quote, pure of heart and strike fear into the hearts of, quote, the impure. So that gets a little muddled when you kind of look at Rowling's issue that she had with Patronuses and the whole thing where she revealed via Wonder Book of Spells, but then later on Pottermore, that if the impure of heart cast a Patronus, they get eaten by maggots. Then everybody was like, well, why didn't Umbridge get eaten by maggots? Because that would have been great. And she explained that Umbridge believed she was pure of heart. She was pure in her intentions. So she really muddled up the definition there. So then that would also imply that if Umbridge heard Phoenix song, she would take heart from it. I don't know about that. So a little bit of a little problematic there. But phoenixes are actually, as she revealed with the new Fantastic Beasts information, they are closely related to thunderbirds.
Ah.
And Rowling has used the term firebird as well in relation somewhat to the phoenix. She directly referred to it when discussing the Japanese huhu.
The what?
Which was the huhu. The Japanese
think that'd be an owl.
Huhu. The Japanese huhu was referenced during the 2014 Quidditch World Cup because it was gifted from the Japanese team to the American team. And the huhu is the Japanese term for the fenghuang, which actually comes from China, but it's a mythology that they share. And the fenghuang only appears in areas blessed with peace and prosperity. But the firebird is actually more in reference to Slavic mythology. And the firebird is actually pretty depressing, depending on which story you're looking at. They tend to be bringers of journeys and hardship, But there is a reward at the end. Sometimes.
I don't know if that's worth it.
No, it's usually not, depending on which version of the Firebird you're reading. There's also, of course, the Firebird can be somewhat malicious depending on your portrayal. For example, the Firebird Suite, which Disney adapted in Fantasia 2000. It's the final segment in Fantasia 2000, and the Firebird is the villain that kind of brings about death and destruction. And there's a great video game done by Jordan Mechner, who did the Prince of Persia games, for those of you listeners who might know those games. And it's called The Last Express, and it's all about the last journey of the Orient Express right before the war in 1918. And the Firebird plays, or 1914, 1918, somewhere around there. And the Firebird plays a really big role in that as well. So there's plenty of pop culture things to explore the Firebird in as well. It's not really confirmed if the Phoenix is tied in with the same kind of class as Firebirds in Rowling's canon. I would assume it would be. But that did raise some questions. The big thing that raises questions for me is that the Firebird is not native to the UK. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there have been lots of theories about Newt bringing not so much Fox, but Aragog to Hogwarts. That's a whole theory in itself. But as one of our listeners, Ginny, a.k.a. Rosemurda, brought up, will Fox maybe be gifted from Newt to Dumbledore?
That would be cute.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
It works with the timeline, potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like he would have to really trust someone to give them a phoenix, and I feel like that's something he would do for Dumbledore. Like, you know, this is how I feel like I can repay you for everything or whatever, but also I feel you're the best person to be able to take care of an animal like mm-hmm. this.
Yeah. No,
and you know, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, you know, I wonder if he maybe thought Fox could take care of Dumbledore in return.
Yeah,
he does in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could definitely see that at the end of the films.
Oh, that would be so. Oh.
Well, like, they would have, like, Newt find this phoenix or catch this phoenix or whatever, like, earlier in the movie, and he would decide on a name for it, and then at the end he'd give it to Dumbledore, and Dumbledore would be like, I think I'll call him Fox, and you'll be like,
How crazy would it be if Newt was the one responsible for, you know, giving Fox to Dumbledore, and Fox is the wand
the Phoenix,
for Harry and Voldemort, and Newt's sitting there thinking, like, I just got done with two, like, an evil wizard battling another wizard, like, and now this is gonna start with a Phoenix I just wanted to give as a gift.
It's all
why
Newt's
did their
fault.
Wand cores have to come from Newt.
Shannon, did you say that Dumbledore goes to pick up Riddle in 1938?
Yeah.
Okay. So it would have to.
So yeah,
if
so that's
that
gotta
is the
happen.
Case, it and yeah, and it yeah. has to happen before the last movie.
That's right.
Likely, because it seems like it's implied, not clarified, but implied that Dumbledore is in possession of Fox before the
yeah.
feathers are given.
I think she said. Or maybe it's in the books that he, like, lent feathers to Ollivander. The
to Ollivander.
Feathers. Yeah.
Does that mean Ollivander is going to be in the movies, too?
Ewan McGregor is Ollivander.
Oh, man.
But
we'll
actually
just find a spot for him anywhere we can.
I don't know
but
how
yes.
old Ollivander is supposed to be, but.
He was, like, ancient.
Yeah, but so was Dumbledore.
I know, but, yeah.
Okay, we don't know how old he's supposed to be.
No.
His birthday is 25th of September, either in 1907 or earlier than 1907, so.
Oh, goodness.
So he's younger than Dumbledore?
Potentially. Yeah,
probably.
That's
not necessarily weird. But potentially.
Yeah.
But yes, I also thought it was interesting that the Phoenix is related to Thunderbirds. Because we have had a very important Thunderbird in our first movie already. I didn't know if that would... Newt seems to have, like, while he is attached to all beasts, he seems to have a very large attachment to bird-like beasts.
So there should be a special bird in every movie. And one of the birds...
We're just waiting for the augury. The augury shall have its time.
Birds there are, but...
The augury, the deer crawl,
the
deer crawl had a little cameo in the movies. And the Phoenix shares that ability with the deer crawl that they can disappear and reappear.
Fooper.
Yeah. Yes, hopefully, we just want the augury to get a better shot than it had in Cursed Child.
Mm-hmm.
No backdrop crap for the augury. Have a main thing for the augury, but yeah, maybe each Fantastic Beasts movie will have an important bird.
I would like that
at its core. And the Phoenix will be the core,
and then the last bird is, you know, a snowy owl, and it's Hedwig's grandparent. I don't know.
Oh no.
We're getting into the last movie and they're like, oh, we're casting Hedwig's ancestor now.
And there's speculation Ewan McGregor might be up for the role.
I think he'd crush it. He'd knock it out of the park. Would.
Absolutely.
But you can I really like your I'm podcast sure
question, Ariel.
That's the most important question.
The most important. Anyway, I will close the Newt case. That is that. You can look forward to Jude Law hanging with the Phoenix at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode all about Jude Law.
Jude Law.
Speaking of Jude Law, our podcast question this week is Jude Law, beard or no beard? And as Ariel points out, there are wrong answers to this question. So send us your fantastic theories, comments, questions, favorite photos of Jude Law, anything really. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Tell us your favorite Jude Law movie.
Yeah.
Do it. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to know what you think of us. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and also remember to check out our fabulous website, speakbeastie.com.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Michael. Case closed.
There's a lot of people outside my apartment right now being Harrison really loud. Ford. Hey, I'm trying to podcast.
Oh my god. Don't yell at Harrison Ford that way.
Harrison!
Harrison, come in here.
Harrison, I'm here.
I love how we're on a first name basis with him. Like, I'd be like, hi, Mr. Ford. Like, I wouldn't be comfortable.
Fun fact, for the longest time, didn't even know this, but my theater director who I did plays with from like elementary through college with was the cousin of Harrison Ford.
What?
What?
Yeah.
My His name was uncle? Paul,
and he was every in every which way the bitter cousin of Harrison Ford.
My uncle met Harrison Ford and like had drinks with him at like a pilots nice. Convention. So that's my in.
Oh yeah.
I don't have Very a nice. Harrison Ford story.